This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Don't forget, Friday we'll be at the Dallas Card Show in Allen at the Marriott 777 Waters Creek.
Waters Crossing?
I think Waters Creek. Right off of 75.
Yes, we will take the Bethany exit, if that helps. All right, we'll be there on Friday. And then in about 20 minutes, we got Bruce Bochy coming up. But right now, it feels like for the most part, people feel like this has been a successful Mavericks offseason already. I'm in that category. I know there are some who don't like the Clay move, but I feel like a lot of people are like, hey, good job.
Can I throw this out for the Clay move? I saw yesterday and I was like, Isaac? I was like, no way this is the Jonathan Isaac.
Oh, it is the Jonathan Isaac. I can't believe the money he got.
Just to give you an idea of the marketplace today, or you can look at the kid Patrick Williams for Chicago. Yeah.
And he got 18.
Yeah, 18 to around this number, 5 years, $84 million for Jonathan Isaac, who last year averaged under 7 points and under three rebounds. So the marketplace is, if you wanted, like, let's say, a younger player, I think the Mavericks getting a guy who hasn't done much, but very similar to those two guys, at least, why am I drawing a blank? Najee Marshall, like, those guys cost $13 to $20 million a year. Guys that average about 6 to 8 points a game and about three to four rebounds a game. Those guys cost about the same that you paid Klay Thompson.
Yeah, the Jonathan Isaac deal, when I saw it, I thought that was outrageous.
Now, there's no Cronuts?
No, Mike.
Who said that?
It's going to be very sad.
Whoa. Show over. Reggie, you said there's going to be Cronuts downstairs.
I'm talking to somebody from the 770 on the text line who said that they supposedly were delivered. So I'm
to what address?
I will go down that rabbit hole. I will take that on my plate.
All right. And I'm furious right now.
I know, and I realized this about 30 seconds before you did when I saw the look of thumbs down. There's no Cronuts in the lobby, and I was like, oh, this is going to be problematic. Because as we've talked about, Mike is in the last week has discovered Cronuts.
Last Friday.
And how awesome they are.
I didn't discover them. Corey discovered them.
But you finally discovered what they were.
It's the first time ever, and I think Big Donuts are in big trouble.
Yes.
I will repeat myself. Cronuts are unbelievable. And then I just got super excited because Atolo said they had brought us Cronuts and they lied.
I think where the conundrum is going to lie is they might have gotten delivered at 8:30 this morning and perhaps the morning show absconded with them or somebody else took them.
All right. I'm on the case, gentlemen.
Okay. Let us know. Now,
you can deliver. Well, donuts are stores are probably closed now.
I'm not sure. We'll look into that.
Great.
Oh, look, we will really try to.
All right, fine. Let's just talk sports.
That person, by the way, is very, very sure that they're like, I'm not lying. I sent them up there, and I believe them.
And so, yeah, Sean and RJ deserve Cronuts.
Right. I don't think that he really believes they deserve.
No,
they
don't. He most definitely does not. Okay, what can the Mavs still do with where they're at right now? So the tax threshold is $170.8 million. And I'll try to limit the math because I realize, Mike, it's an important part of the conversation.
Watching Bobby Marks on ESPN, this is so important, but it is very tough to
complicated.
Understand.
The Mavericks right now are projected at about approximately $175 million in salary. And now you might be like, oh, that's over the tax threshold. That's true. But you don't get to the first apron yet. And the thing with the first and second apron that teams are terrified of is if you get to the second apron, if you're not hard capped, then the taxes become outrageous. On, you know, when you would hear like, hey, the Warriors, by drafting and signing James Wiseman, they're paying him $35 million a year. That's because of all the additional taxes that you would have to pay on players over the first apron.
Let's just say Kevin Durant said, screw it, I want to go play with LeBron. I can't believe nobody wants to go play with this guy. I want to go play.
Yes.
Because LeBron signed his contract, they literally cannot trade for him. It's impossible. So you start running into situations where if you go past the second apron, you can't do any. That's your team. I don't want to say you can't do anything, but it makes it close to impossible to do anything. So that second apron is like, you better love your team because making transactions is pretty much over for your organization.
Now, for the Mavericks, you can obviously, you can still sign your second round pick. We've had discussions about whether he'll be stashed away for a little bit or whatever. And also, I believe they have the, I don't know if it's the biannual exception, but they have an exception of 4.4.
Yeah, that's the biannual.
$1 million.
And they do have that available?
They do still have that available. Okay. To still try and make a move. So there's a variety.
But that would take them over an apron that they might not want to go to.
That is true, because then they would be $1.3 million over that apron. And you might be thinking, oh, $1.3 million, not the end of the world for an owner. But that's the thing. That's where the taxes start to, I don't know if exponentially increase, but they increase at a very rapid rate.
And the aprons, honestly, it's really less about the taxes themselves, especially once we start talking about like that super class of NBA owner that's now there. It's more about the prohibitions that they put on team building. Yes. And I think that's what Nico Harris was talking about when in his exit interview, somebody was like, do you think that this new ownership will be willing to pay? He's like, money is not the issue. It's doing it the right way. And I think what he was alluding to is making sure that you still have avenues available to make moves. Because if you, like Mike said, if you get over certain aprons, it really undercuts your ability to do very much of anything.
You can also get penalized at draft picks. I know that is something that they put in there as well. And so, we didn't get a chance to talk about this name yesterday. I know Dennis Smith Jr. came up and essentially you're like, hey, that's great. Buddy Hield already on the move. Probably wasn't going to happen anyway. Does Spencer Dinwiddie move the needle for you at all? Because that's somebody that obviously we talked about on the buyout market, ended up going to the Lakers. There's still discussion that he's thinking about those two teams.
If he has no problem watching 50 games this year and not playing 1 second, I'm all for it.
Okay.
But he went to the Lakers, who were a worse team with less talent and less depth and couldn't get into their games for the most part. So I need to know where he is at. Is he okay sitting next to Dwight Powell for the majority of games?
Yeah. Is there, let me ask you this, is there a, I'm going to say position, knowing like what the NBA is now. Mm-hmm. Is there a position or style of player that you think would not necessarily just get the fate of barring injuries, you're just sitting? Like, is there somebody who could really be a rotation-ish
if
person?
If you could find a dude who's 6'9", 6'10", who can guard 1 through 5. Those are very tough. Yeah. Like, I'll tell you who can, for the most part. Maxi Kleba can, and he's the only guy, and I already know he's going to miss 40 games next year.
So when people talk about moving away from him, then you're like,
You don't really have a guy to replace that 6'9", 6'10" guy who can play that position. Look, is he limited? Yeah, he's a limited player. That's why he only makes $11 million in the game. But if you could find another 6'9", 6'10" guy, because Najee Marshall, if I have his height right, is 6'7".
Or 6'6", I thought.
Grimes is 6'4", 6'5". You just start looking at, you know that Klay Thompson's 6'6". So you kind of look at all these guys. I like all these guys, and these guys are going to be part of your rotation. But they're all kind of around that 6'6" marker. Where, man, having a 6'9", 6'10" guy like McDaniels for Minnesota, obviously we're not getting him, but like that would be a guy you'd be like, dude, if you could add a guy like him who's like 6'9" and a really nice wing player who can guard a lot of positions, that would be a guy who would immediately enter into your 20 to 30 minute rotation. But right now, that's a, I don't have a name for you, but that would be the one guy. That's why, like, when Jonathan Isaac got $84 million, he got that money only because he's 6'10" and athletic. Literally, that's the only thing he is.
I remember that draft, and I said, if you told me he would end up as the biggest bust in this class, in this lottery, I would believe it. But if you told me somehow he turned out to be the best player, I might listen to that as well. But yeah, he had a lot of bust potential on him. And I'm not saying he's a terrible player. He just got a contract extension. I just don't really get that particular contract extension. All right. So
or Patrick Williams.
Yeah, $18 million for him is a whole per year.
That's based off of potential. It's not based off of anything they've done.
Do you anticipate then, I guess, any sort of move like that? Because it feels like probably not if that's what you're looking for. So do we still think there are going to be more move-ins and shake-ins in the Mavs offseason, or do you think this is pretty much going to be it?
Yeah, I think this is it.
Okay.
Because let me bring up a name that I don't think is going to find minutes, but a guy who fits the category that I'm saying is Omax Prosper.
Well, and somebody goes, what about Omax? Like, you can project that, but you haven't seen it on any level of consistent basis.
Yeah, in his junk minutes, he did not impress at all. You know who did is Jaden Hardy. Jaden Hardy impressed so much in junk minutes in one game that he became part of your playoff rotation and actually showed valuable minutes in the playoffs at times. Other times he didn't. Other times like, we got to get him off the court, this and that. But Omax is a guy who hopefully in summer league and throughout this off season, which is a short off season, can develop into, hey, maybe we could play him. Dorian Finney-Smith was worse than him his rookie year, but he was on a horrible team. So you're like, who cares? Play him. Same with Maxi Kleba. Who cares? He sucks. Play him. And they ended up being on such a bad team, the Dallas Mavericks, you know, that they were both able to develop into really nice, usable pieces on teams. But the tough thing about Omax Prosper is the Mavericks are trying to win 52 to 60 games this year. They're trying to be a top three seed. And that makes it really tough to just throw Omax Prosper out there for 15 minutes a night, no matter what.
And to a certain extent, extend out the minutes of Jaden Hardy. Like, I know he can get 15 minutes, and you saw it in the playoffs as well, but there were definitely times when they were like, he might have a lot of potential, but he has some frustrating plays that made it seem like Jason Kidd's like, I can't risk it.
Yeah, and he's only 6'3" and needs to be at times a ball handler, and he's better as an off-ball guard. And at 6'3", that does work with Luka, but then he works better with Kyrie because the speed and tempo that Kyrie plays at, and when Kyrie's off the court, the speed and tempo that Luka plays at isn't beneficial at times to Jaden Hardy, but that's the best combo of their sizes and abilities is to have Hardy and Luka on the court at the same time because he can cover up for the size of Hardy, and then Hardy can cover up for the lack of speed of Luka, possibly defensively. But that's a guy that I look at, and I know that maybe this isn't the topic, but I'm like, yeah, I don't think they should do anything else because I want Hardy to get minutes. I don't want another. Not that I don't want Dennis Smith Jr. I'm not saying I don't want him, but I want Hardy playing over Dennis Smith Jr. if they were both on the team.
Yeah, and I might kind of feel that a little bit about whatever move you might make that would stop the potential for Omax Prosper, just because I do kind of want to see it. I realize it's hard to push forward both of those players to the next level in the same season where you just came off the finals when you didn't use either one of them like a whole ton. But man, if Omax Prosper could come through into any semblance of what we hope he can be, that feels like that would be a huge deal. For
it would be huge. And I tell you, I'll tell you what, I won't put it past Nico. Nico getting Jaden Hardy with the 37th overall pick. Nico getting Cronuts. We got him. Okay, I'll concentrate. I promise. There's two more minutes till I can dig in.
I can tell you, coming up next is going to be my and my alone interview with Bruce Bochy because it's going to be Cronut time.
I forgot we were interviewing Bruce Bochy coming up.
Oh, my God.
All right, so we got to get out of here soon. But I will say, what Nico has done with his draft pick so far, Derek Lively doing very little at Duke to prove he's a 10 or 12 overall pick. I know he ended up going 12. The Mavericks would have taken him 10.
Yeah.
That's the one thing about the Oklahoma City. Guess what? If Oklahoma City would have said, we're taking Derek Lively,
then the Mavericks wouldn't have traded.
Yeah. They would have just taken Derek Lively at 10. They knew who was going 10 and 11 if they traded to 12. So anyways, Nico has done a tremendous job with limited draft assets so far. So I'm not going to put it past him that Omax does have ability. It just wasn't able to shine in year one, and he wasn't ready to shine in the NBA in year one.
The KNC masterpiece right here on 105
Kevin,
through the fan.
Real quick, can I shout out the 770 for helping Mike out and obviously taking him away from last segment in some ways?
You're the best. Whatever your name is, you're awesome.
Coming up next, tell Mike your name. He'll definitely shout you out. We'll have Cronut talk inevitably. Plus, We will talk with Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy right here on 105 Through the Fan.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rat pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
This segment of the KNC Masterpiece is the Expressway, and it's brought to you by the On-Time Experts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You know, if you're looking to spice up your game day grub, reach for the original Louisiana brand hot sauce, the official hot sauce of the Texas Rangers, the original Louisiana brand hot sauce. Flavor favors the bold, and it also brings to you Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, guys. How are we doing?
We're doing good, and you know, something I wanted to get your thoughts about this. Eric Nadell asked Nathaniel Lowe yesterday after the game, hey, what's your message to the fans? And his biggest message was, he goes, just stick with us. And I get the sense that in good times and especially bad this year, it still feels like the Metroplex is all about the Texas Rangers. Have you and the team still felt like, you know, that sense of like, come on, guys, we got this, regardless of what the record is?
Yeah, we have. We have. I mean, you can feel that at the ballpark. Great crowds are, you know, they're into the games. And, you know, that's what's been disappointing for us, you know, that we haven't played a little bit better. But, you know, that's, I agree with Nate. You know, stick with us. And you never know what can happen. We've seen some teams who thought were out of it. Houston, one of them. Now they're right there. You know, they fought back. And so you never know in this game. I've been in tougher situations, to be honest. So it's just a matter of getting on a nice run, and that can happen anytime. But, I mean, we're at the halfway point. So, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, we're still looking at this division. I can promise you that.
For Nate Lowe, I know, obviously, the home runs last night, but a few days ago, he hit a home run off of a pitch that was 95.7 miles per hour. The hardest pitch he's ever hit a home run on. And then last night, 96.5 miles per hour. I know at times he's had problems with the fastball, but it really feels like his bat speed has picked up and his ability against the fastball has picked up. Is that what you've seen?
Well, I think, yeah, that's what we've all seen. And I don't know if his bat speed's picked up as much as his contact point. Nice. He's catching it out front a little bit better. And, you know, that's what I think as a group that's been a little bit different about us this year versus last year. And the fastballs are beating us. And granted, you're seeing the best fastballs ever. I mean, it's across the league, you know, a lot of teams are way down with the offensive part, and, you know, except for maybe Baltimore, New York. I'm talking about the Yankees. So, anyway, it's all about adjusting. And every hitter has to do it, and now Nate looks like he's made a nice adjustment. He is catching that ball out front. Even a ball to left field, you know, it's still, you know, you can't back it up too much, and you know, he's not doing that now. So, yeah, we're seeing what Nate can do when he does get hot.
How about Derek Hill and yeah. You calling him back up and what he's been able to provide this team?
Wow, he's got some power. I tell you, we saw him in spring training. He doesn't just hit cheap ones. He's got some big power. I used to call it sneaky power, but it's not sneaky. It's legit. And so, yeah, he was a guy that has been kind of trying to get his way up, you know, back up to the big leagues. He makes it up with us. He's DFA'd and signs back with us. Goes back there and does his thing, and has an OPS over 1,000, and earned his call up, and he just has a great attitude. You know, hey, you ask him, how's it going? Oh, I'm blessed. He just has that terrific energy and attitude you like. But you know, he's a gifted player. This guy should be in the big leagues. He can run, play anywhere in the outfield, and I think the hitting's just getting better and better with him.
And one of the things behind that, and I mean this in the best possible way, how much do you like his aggressiveness at times at the plate? And can you tell us any more about that?
Yeah, well, know, that is something that we have talked about because, you know, we did take a lot of pitches and they were good pitches to hit. But, you know, he doesn't do that. If it's in the zone, he's going to take a swing. And that's what you like about him. If there's one thing that I don't want these young guys to do is come up here and take, you know, especially two pitches. You know, come up here, be aggressive. It's okay if you swing at a slider down, but you know, you're not going to hit a good fastball if you're trying to make a swing decision halfway to home.
So when it comes to the other side of the field, the defense, Josh Smith has had to fill in for Corey Seager the last 2 days. And I was talking earlier in the show, he saved 4 hits in 2 games so far at shortstop. I guess you can take this in multiple directions, but he's been great defensively at third. Is he your best defensive player?
Oh, I'd say. I mean, Marcus, I mean, you look what he's doing at second base, but I'm talking about someone who's moving all over the field and to do what he's doing at third base and then go to second base. I mean, that ball up the middle, that little flip he has, he makes it look so easy. He's got great hands. He's got a good arm. And then if you need to put him out in the outfield, including the center field, he does a great job there. So, yeah, I'd say he's got to be our best defender. And just the fact that he plays everywhere, but not just play there, but he's a plus defender wherever you put him.
And I know deserving doesn't always get it done, but when you talk about his defensive versatility, what he's done offensively, it really feels like Josh Smith deserves to be an all-star.
Well, I feel that way. You know, that's probably my biggest disappointment is I don't have a say in this.
Yeah,
I can politic, you know, you can do that all you want, but, you know, I used to have, you know, the picks on the extra guys, and I certainly think he should be there because I look how valuable he is for us with Josh Young going down and the job he's done and where he's played at third and short and not just played there, but what a terrific job. But here he's hitting in, you know, the 2-hole, 3-hole, he's even hit cleanup, 5-hole, and he just keeps on going. So, you know, my hope is there's a way that he makes it.
Chris Young a week ago here said, look, Josh Smith is going to play every day when Josh Young comes back. There'll be multiple roles for him to play, and I think you're laying this out where he can play because of defensively he can even pop into the outfield some. With watching him play shortstop and how he can do this, does this give you the ability to maybe, let's say, twice a week DH Corey Seager and get him off his feet at shortstop?
Yeah, really, across the board, everybody, you know, first base even, you know, and, you know, I'll try to talk Marcus into DH, and he does not like it, but really everywhere, including the outfield. So, yeah, the way he's playing, sure, you got to find a spot for who has been your best hitter, and that's just being honest. You look at the numbers and what he's done, you know, at this point, so. We'll find a spot for him, and yeah, if it's given Corey some time off, and when Josh Young comes back, we're not gonna be able to run him out there every day at first. So, it's a very workable situation.
And then for Josh Young, I know you have to give an update on him all the time, but for the fans, Josh Young's update on when possibly we could see him with the Rangers.
Yeah, you know what? We're in a holding pattern with him, so. I wish I could give you a date. I'm going to get with our medical staff today. You know, it's kind of like you get a bad scrape, and you know, you keep pulling that scab off, and that's kind of what he's doing when we bring him back and rehabbing him. So we'll decide what's the best route to go with him soon.
Tyler Mahle last night pitched 2 innings, 1 hit, 1 strikeout. Did you get a good report on how he felt off the mound yesterday in AAA?
Yeah, he felt great. Yeah, he was throwing the ball well here in live BP, and I'm not surprised that he went down there and threw well. He, tell you what, he's got great stuff, and he's got really good slider and a good changeup. So I know he had to have the adrenaline going for his first outing.
Logical that we would just get the normal progression of a few more rehab starts from him before he could potentially come up to the big club?
I'd say I don't really want to put a number. I'd say probably around August It could be a week before. It could be a week after. It's a great start to go 2 innings and throw the ball the way he did.
Here's something that I don't know. Do you have to, at the All-Star break, last year there was a big meeting that was, hey, we're going to go all in. We're going to try to win this whole thing. So if I have to trade some guys that you guys like, I have to do it because we're going all in. Are there times where you've had to talk to a general manager and say, can you give us a little bit more time? Like this year, you're under 500, but this team proved a lot last year where you have to say, hey, if teams are calling about our guys to help out other teams, give us a week or so maybe to prove that we can stay in this race?
And now I haven't had that conversation. I'll tell you why, because I can tell you, see why. He's not one to say uncle and not believe that we can still get there. It's an insult for him. So anyway, and he has talked about that. You mentioned it to the club, and that's not, on his mind at all. I mean, it won't be unless something just drastically happens, the rest of the way here. But I feel good about where we're at, how we're playing, and how we're throwing the ball. So, I would not do that.
Was that ever something you experienced in San Francisco on any of the seasons after your World Series, that kind of same thing where you're like, hey, we're the defending champs. Like, we need a little bit more time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's easy to get caught in, what's happening in the present. And, this past month hasn't been all that great for us. But there's a lot of baseball left, and you can't forget that. And you have until, the deadline's not for a while. So, yeah, this time, and it's way too early, I think, to even be talking about it.
You talked about how June was kind of a rougher month for the team. One really bright spot, in addition to a lot of the pitching, was Wyatt Langford. He also got to send his cleats to Cooperstown from getting the cycle. I'm hoping you could just talk about what kind of an honor that is, and then what we saw from June Wyatt Langford.
Yeah. I'm a fan, too. Trust me. I'm in that dugout, and he's somebody I love watching. I love the way he gets down the line. He's thinking, double or triple. It's just fun to watch play the game. He's a complete baseball player. And, I'm not surprised at the beginning. Yeah, he's trying to find his way. You always going to have some growing pains with young players. But this guy's going to have a tremendous career. He just gets it. He's got a passion for the game. Nobody works harder, and nobody plays harder. And, for him to accomplish what he did on those three things to be the first time ever in the player's first year, I mean, that's incredible. I could never think of an inside of Parker and him for the cycle. It just shows you what some amazing things this guy can do, and not just with the bat, but I think he's going to be a plus outfielder. He's doing a great job there now. He's a plus runner. He's one of the fastest guys in the game. So we're lucky to have him. He's one of those exciting players. I certainly would buy a ticket to watch him play.
I know there are so many beautiful plays that can happen in baseball, but something that Wyatt Langford does that I absolutely love is how he can stretch a regular-looking single into a double, and he's done that multiple times this season.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's thinking double. I mean, even the ground ball base hits, and infielders think they have plenty of time. He beats them out. I mean, he's a powerful runner, too. It just powers his way. Sometimes they're gliders, but, he's got such strong legs, I look at a Bo Jackson, somebody like that. They were powerful runners. A Trout, that's who he is.
Well, I have a couple fun questions. Speaking of cycles, and then the Summer Olympics are about to happen, what do you think was a bigger miracle, the miracle on ice in 1980 or Benji Molina hitting for the cycle for the Texas Rangers?
Man, that is a tough call, man. Wow. I had Benji, and I saw him run. I got to say, Benji, he edges out the miracle on the ice. Really, really is amazing. That's a good one there. I like it.
And then another fun one is, I don't know if you've ever had a cronut, but it is a croissant donut. And I think big donuts are in trouble. A donut cannot compare to this cronut. Have you ever had a croissant donut called a cronut?
I have not. I haven't. You know, I'm a sinker fan, donut fan. You know, no Sunday day games. I push them, too. It's good luck. You know, just like a hot dog sometimes, you know, before a game, certain cities, L.A., for example. I said, eat their dogs are dogs. That's the best way to beat them. So I'm the same way with donuts. I had a Krispy Kreme. I mean, literally a half a block from me, you know, where I live in Melbourne, Florida. So, you know, a good glazed donut's like crack for me.
Well, us Ranger fans, we have to get you a cronut because I think this could take over your donut and you could say, I need a cronut.
Okay. I'm in. I'm looking forward to it.
Whenever you see Mike out on the road, he's definitely going to make that happen for you. Thank you very much, good sir. Always appreciate the time.
Of course, man. Great talking to you guys. Y'all have a good rest of the day.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That was us closing the door on this interview with Bruce Bochy.
You had a lot of people coming in and out of that room.
The Rangers know that big wins come from bold plays. That's why the original Louisiana brand hot sauce is the official hot sauce of the Texas Rangers. The original Louisiana brand hot sauce flavor favors the bold. Also bringing us that interview. But yes, for people texting in or putting it up on the Twitch, yes, I definitely heard all of the doors opening and closing.
And they got a WD-40 that thing, or they got to tell them, hey, I'm doing an interview. That's like Jerry Jones. Jeez.
One of my favorite moments, aside from the time that he swore at us too many times and the phone automatically cut him off, was you could hear some noise happening right outside of Jerry Jones' office, and then all of a sudden you hear this thud. And the noise stops. And I said, Jerry, I just want to let you know that we're paying attention. Did you just throw something at the wall and make that person go away or stop? And he goes, man, that's really perceptive. That is exactly what just happened. And it was just one of my favorite moments because I don't remember who it was or what kind of noise they were making. But
I thought he banged on the table, Jerry. But I hear but it's like to get their attention, like, Hey, I have 5 minutes here that I need you guys to get out of this room.
Yes.
And stop going in and out of here.
So there's a variety of things coming out of the Boch conversation, as there always are. One of the things that I thought he gave us a great breakdown was they just have a better contact point with the ball. So whenever we talk about the struggles of the hitters this year, because I hate to simplify everything too much, but if you're like, hey, what's happening with the Rangers? All the injuries? No! They're just not hitting as well. And when he talked about the contact point that they're getting to the ball, that's a huge deal.
So I was watching this thing on Wake Forest. They have two pretty high prospects in this upcoming draft. And I'm not saying, I don't even think either one of them will be a Texas Ranger in the draft. But they're talking about one of Wake Forest's best hitters. And the head coach of the team says in fall, they play fall baseball in college. And he says at times he will go behind home plate and be the umpire. And he says, it gives me another perspective on my guys. And he says about this Wake Forest kid who's their best hitter. He says, it's amazing. I'm about to call strike or ball, and then I see his bat come through the zone so quickly and so late that he's able to let the ball travel more than any player he's ever had in his college career.
That's an amazing skill.
And that's when you're a great hitter, it's almost like you can make a decision so late and yet have a great contact point or still catch the ball into a position where you can hit the ball fair very hard because you're letting the ball travel as far as possible and then still your bat speed and your bat head get into a contact point where you can still make great contact where sometimes if you make a late decision, the ball's by you.
Yeah, and I loved his breakdown about that for Nathaniel Lowe. Now, I know he was talking about the team in general, but especially Nathaniel Lowe. Then another thing, sorry, there's a lot of things coming out of that interview that I was interested in. Corey Seager, I guess I just naturally expected some pushback, but just by the nature of the physical toll those positions take and the injuries, you heard him very readily. He's like, that's a possibility for Corey Seager. That's something you could see at first base. Clearly, Josh Jung is not going to be playing at third every single day. And the way he said, it's a very manageable issue. clearly they've had lots of discussions and have plans A, B, and C for when these players come back.
I don't think Evan Carter's coming back anytime soon.
Somebody asked me earlier, we haven't got an update on him forever. I forgot to freaking ask Boach about that.
I had mine were Young and Malley because at least Malley's really rehabbing. Like, he really pitched two innings yesterday and did great. I just wanted to tell you guys, two innings, one hit, no walks, one strikeout. It's like you heard from him, it's probably going to be, and by the way, the minor leagues have an all-star break too. So it's not like he can pitch during that time. You have the double A and the triple A all-star game happening around the same time. So there will be a break in minor league action too. You can send him to Arizona and pitch against rookie ball kids, but so he can get innings there. But you really want him pitching against double A and triple A as much time as he's been off. And not pitching because of Tommy, or I don't want to say, was it Tommy John? I think it was like literally Tommy John for him. But you just want him pitching against high competition. So he's more ready to pitch in the major leagues after having approximately a year and change off. But for Evan Carter, I'm guessing this is only a guess and only my opinion. I don't think it's going to be till at least August you see him. So to ask on July 3rd, I don't think they have an idea, and I don't think they're expecting him back till August.
Which is a little concerning because he saw the back specialist 6 weeks ago. And then 4 weeks ago when we heard, we'll probably reevaluate him in about 30 days. And you haven't heard much of anything there. But for Malley, August. And he said maybe beginning of August. And he goes, give or take a week either way, which... I mean, that's an exciting piece of business because he could be back in a month.
I'm assuming he's going to pitch on July 6th, three innings. Just to give you his rehab, I can count it out and know July 6th, he's going to throw three innings because he'll have today, he'll have off of like throwing, you know, competitively. He'll play catch. Then on the 4th, he will throw a bullpen. Then on the 5th, he'll have a day off. And then on the 6th, he'll throw three innings around 45 to 50 pitches. Then he's going to probably, because of his injury, now go on every 5th day.
Okay.
And so then from there, if you just count it off, that would be July 11th, then July 16th, on July 21st. And there's that break so it gets a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
Then on July 21st, he will be up to, you're hoping, 80 to 90 pitches.
Yeah.
But because of his major injury, I don't know if they want to force him into July 20th against Baltimore, pitching his first game in the major leagues against Baltimore on about 80 to 90 pitches. So maybe you give him that day. And then you're looking at, if everything goes perfect with his rehab, you're looking at July 26th or July 27th approximately would be the time he can come back. So I think his give or take, obviously working off of how I know rehab is off of Tommy John and getting ready for your kind of spring training, you're looking at around July 25th to July 30th is when he could make his first major league start for the Rangers.
And then one more potential discussion point for the future, the idea that, and I realize he's only been doing this for 2 years, the idea that Wyatt Langford could be a plus or a plus plus outfielder.
His speed is tremendous.
And that's what fascinates me and gets you excited for the future. Because as much as we were talking about, like, hey, can you stretch a single into a double? He runs with power. And he was like, not just offensively either. I thought that was interesting.
He made a play down the line yesterday. And I get if you kind of turned it off because the Rangers looked like they had it in hand. And maybe it was an easier play than I think. But I do think if you're a below average left fielder, you're not going to get to the foul ball he got to. And there's not much foul territory where he caught it. But he made it easy. He got to the point, slowed down, made a nice catch. And maybe there's a few guys that don't even get to that ball. And nothing against Ezekiel Duran. He's not a left fielder at all, but Duran might have not got to that ball just because he just doesn't feel comfortable out there. And Wyatt Langford, this is his third year to ever play outfield in his life.
Yeah, which...
So just remember that. He does not have a good arm. He doesn't have a bad arm, but he does not have a good arm. That's not going to change, I don't think. So you're going to deal with Wyatt Langford being, I think, premium speed out there, hopefully covering a lot of ground with an average arm.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, and... I know you're thinking, does that mean commercial break? No,
it means
time for Mike Likes It, where I'm just going to assume this is going to be about Cronuts.
It's not.
Okay. But you could see why.
I'm Cronutted out, actually. I had one major Cronut and like three Cronut holes. I'm very happy. They were very awesome. Thank you, 770.
Yes.
Anonymous name. I wanted to talk about this when you said give your sports opinion. I wanted to talk about this, but I didn't want to go too far into it because I thought this was a bigger discussion. Watching a lot of basketball podcasts lately in my free time off of free agency and everything, this name got brought up again And I'm thinking, I'm going to ask this question. And this is scary for Dallas Maverick fans because we've talked about Oklahoma City and their offseason. How great can Jalen Williams become? He just turned 23 at the end of the season. So next year, he's going to play the whole regular season at 23 years old. He's the 6'6" guard that they drafted 12th overall in 2022.
They have two Jalen Williams.
Right. Then they have the Arkansas bigger Jalen Williams, who's kind of a power forward center type of guy. This is the guard guy who was really good in the playoffs against the Mavs. He averaged 17 points on 42.4% shooting, 38% from the three-point line.
Do you remember
averaged 6.5 rebounds and 5.7 assists in the Maverick series.
My apologies, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you remember what we said going into that series? You might not know the name Jalen Williams now, but you will.
Yeah, so here's my question. With what he did in the playoffs, by the way, in round one when they swept New Orleans, he averaged 21, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists. Do you think he could step up and be... He's a little bit different defensively. He's solid defensively. You know how Jaylen Brown, you're like, now it's like 50-50 on who's better, Tatum or Brown, and he won both the MVPs in the playoffs. Yet I do think Tatum's great and could have won either one, too. Are we in a scary part where we look at Oklahoma City and go, we could get to next year and go, oh, crap, Shea and Jalen Williams are both top 10 players in this league?
I think Jalen might take another year beyond that, but I'll tell you what will help with his progression. And you were talking about his defense. Man, oh man, did he start to figure out the three this year. I realize he's still not a prolific three-point shooter, but he increased by getting close to one extra three-pointer per game. If he stretches that out at a 40 or plus 40% clip, that's terrifying.
Yeah, and Jalen Williams, he's a wing, just to be a little bit clearer there. I think one of the things for him is during the course of the season, you remember the game in which the first game that P.J. Washington and Daniel Gafford play, and the Mavericks get a big-time win against that Thunder team. One of the things that was interesting was Jalen Williams driving downhill. He has that in his bag. However, he can be a little predictable. I was impressed by how you saw them again in the postseason, and he had a little bit more to his drive. I think that that's also a place where if he adds more, and I think he will, in fact, to his ability to get downhill and the finish, you know, with contact and finish in a way that's not predictable, I think that, yeah, he has all-star potential. And so I don't think that he could be 1 and 1A with Shea. I think Shea is above him in that way. But they could be a very close 1 and 2 to the point where it's like, oh, this is a problem for the league.
It's not exactly a parallel, but the one thing that you hope is it also feels like there's a ton of room for Derek Lively to progress in a couple of different avenues. So that's what I immediately thought of. I know, very different players, but I'm scared about Jalen Williams, but I'm also optimistic about how much better Derek Lively could potentially be.
I'm with you. And I'm going to stick right here with Oklahoma City for my next Oklahoma City question, because I think that Oklahoma City is going to be a major problem for Dallas the next 2 years, and Dallas is going to be a major problem for Oklahoma City.
Yes.
Is... Who do you think will be better 2 years from now as the number two guy? If we go to that, Shea's always going to be number one. Jalen won't take that over. Do you think Chet or Jalen?
I'm probably going to say Chet because I realize he had the injury. But man, oh man, you look at his numbers from this year, and the fact that he stayed healthy was big for me, just because you look at his body type and you worry that maybe he'll be a little frailer. But the fact that he was just fine, I think it's going to go Chet, but I understand your question.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of looking at it. Chet, just, I think there's more potential there because of like the ways that he can stretch, the defensive prowess, all those things. I still lean towards Jalen Williams right now. Maybe that's just like a recency bias, seeing him and being impressed with him. But I really like what Jalen Williams has as well.
You know, it's going to be interesting is Oklahoma City is going to be put in a situation which it doesn't matter for the next 2 years. And I want to talk about the Mavs salaries, how low the Mavs salaries are. Looking at what we've been kind of, I can't believe, like Patrick Williams and
Jonathan Isaac.
If you look at what PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford are making.
My God.
They are going to, when they hit free agency, they are going to be $25 to $30 million players a year, the way that the way salaries are going up. And right now you have them for approximately under $15 million apiece.
Yes.
And you look at what teams are paying now for people like that, and you're like, wow, the Mavericks have a great window where they won't go into apron two because they have so many players. Derek Lively, obviously, for the next 3 years is under a rookie deal. And so you just look at what they've been able to do salary structure wise. And I look at Oklahoma City the same way. It's like for the next 2 years, neither team has to worry about aprons for the most part. But I wonder about Oklahoma City if they create this super team, which they might have done again. Now, they didn't win a title with the first super team because they said, we can't pay it.
Yeah.
We're not maxing out three guys. Plus, we got a couple other guys that we really like that are role players that we want to pay, and we'll keep the role players and turn Harden into down the future, down the road assets. Is you're going to have to, at the same time, max out Jalen Williams, max out Chet Holmgren. At that point, Shea might be a super max guy. Like, I just wonder if they've lined up the Harkenstein. Think of it. He's a $30 million guy.
Yeah, which, that was...
Which Derek Lively's going to be a $40 million guy. You have him for 3 to 4 years at your number, and then Lively's going to be $40-plus million a year after that, which lines up a little bit with kind of, I would assume, the regression of Kyrie Irving and kind of him coming off the books as a $40-plus million player. And I look at what they did, and I do think they're smart to go, we can afford a $30 million center right now. When his contract runs out, we obviously now have to up these guys' salaries by $30-plus million a year. And so I can see where Oklahoma City has already set this up to go, we can give these guys extra help. By the time these two guys get maxed out, we can't give those guys those extra player help guys anymore.
Yeah, that's an interesting breakdown, and it does feel to me like Oklahoma City has emerged. And honestly, right now, I think Denver might have fallen to third in my West power rankings right now.
And I mean, some of that is depth, and one of the things Mike, you're talking about kind of the ways in which that cap situation starts building on you once you get players that are paid a lot. One of the things that Sam Presti has been really proactive about, they have so much draft capital available to them so that they can continue to draft young players.
They only have five first-rounders next year.
Yeah, only. Only a sixth of the first round for next year.
It's like more than we have for the next decade.
And one of the things that they've also been really smart about is they continue to shift those forward when they need to, right? They'll give you a current first-round pick so that they can get one in 5 years. And so I think that they'll do a good job of, once those salaries start hitting, having those draft picks available to get young talent in there to build around the costly pieces around them as well.
All right, since we talk basketball here, I got a question for you. I'm going to give you an option. Corey's not here right now. Coming up next,
what?
Do you want me to try to recreate the C block?
Don't even want to hear the other option.
Okay, I will try to do that.
It's Kevin's corner.
Next, right here on The Fan.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.